Good afternoon. Before we start with closing argument, let me address one issue. I received a motion to intervene from Time Publishing Company. Who's here on behalf of that case? All right. I'm not going to. Okay. Then on the matter of closing, when the evidence is closed, we're ready to wrap this case up. I had suggested yesterday 1 hour for plaintiff's closing and a combination of an hour and a half for defense closing. Is there anything we need to address before we get right to closing?
Your Honor, the only thing I'd request, because of rebuttal with five lawyers arguing against me, maybe a little longer, I'd like to say an extra 10 minutes.
Well, I'm not going to stop you right at 60 minutes.
That's fine.
I mean, I'll certainly be flexible.
I'm just going to try to use 40 minutes of my time and use 20 for rebuttal.
Okay. And of course, I'm going to accommodate you on that. Then plaintiffs may proceed. Mr. Richmond?
May it please the court, Your Honor. The issue is whether the differential or preferential treatment by the supervisor of elections in this case was sufficient to compromise the validity of the election process. That's how we framed it. Your Honor framed it slightly differently, but I want to address the two. Certainly.
There are certainly allegations, very strident allegations, that there was differential treatment. As I reviewed the evidence last night, in fact, I'm going to rephrase it. What I want you to do is show me where there was differential treatment. It seems to me what happened was that the supervisor of elections allowed the Republicans to come in and alter the ballot request form.
Correct.
The testimony seemed to indicate that the supervisor of elections didn't offer that to the Democrats, but it also seems that the Democrats didn't ask for that. So talk to me about that issue and show me where in the record the facts would indicate one way or another.
Absolutely. The Democrats did not know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
No Democrats, no independents had any idea that this was happening until October 30th when it came out publicly. And at the time it happened on October 30th, it was already essentially too late to do anything.
And in fact, let me ask another question on that point. It seems that the cards sent out by the Republicans did not contain a spot for that information.
It did not contain.
It seems that the cards sent out by the Democrats did contain that information. Now, talk to me about that a little bit.
Absolutely.
Not the information, but the line where to put the information.
Yeah, the Republican card contained a place where it was to have been pre-printed, and they pre-printed apparently on some. If I remember the testimony from the excerpts, they said they came in about 30-70, so about 30% apparently had it, 70% didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is they sent them out two in an envelope, the households. So if they weren't both registered Republicans, they'd get there and hope that the other person would also fill one out. But they didn't have or didn't put on the number on there. The Democrats, surprisingly in this case,
they didn't put on a space for the registration number to be filled in. Is that correct?
That's correct, because they were assuming that it was going to be on the pre-printed form on the front.
Okay.
So they would try to make it easy for the voter to go ahead and just put this information on the back.
Mm-hmm.
The Democrats, surprisingly, did it the right way. As far as their mass mailing goes, but what that doesn't address is all of the Democrats who may not have gotten the mass mailing. It doesn't address independents, and it doesn't address other people. And that's who's disparately treated. And it's not just disparate treatment with regard to the mailing issue. It's disparate treatment in terms of what you do afterwards, and that what was done was a violation of the law. The important thing is they never called Mr. Poe. And we didn't call Mr. Poe. But the evidence is that Mr. Poe found out about it on October 30th, and he just said this is illegal. And Sandra Gord goes ahead, and she keeps right on doing it, knowing, having to know with her knowledge of the law that it's illegal. Now, if you take that in point of time, let's assume for a moment that the Democratic Party went ahead and said, We'd like to do it, too. Two wrongs don't make a right. But you've got disparate treatment here. You can't limit disparate treatment just to the party or two parties. Disparate treatment is the whole universe of voters that are there. That's what you have here. Not everybody is affiliated with a particular party. If you went ahead and took the public office or the supervisor of elections and you turned it into a base for just the two major political parties, what happens to all the other parties? If you turn it into a base for everybody, those are not the facts we're dealing with here. You have to go by the facts, and what the facts are is that they took a public office, and that public office was then turned into an agent or an arm of one particular political party. And the reason doesn't matter, because the law says you cannot do that. And they take the agent of that political party, they sit him in there, and this is the reason, by the way, Your Honor, why we said we've got a stipulation and a lot of the facts, probably enough to give us summary judgment in our favor, I think are stipulated to, except with regard to the issue of the remedy, because of the Boardman case and the Bolden case and others, we needed more to get into the issue of the sanctity and integrity of the election process. And the way we go about doing that is by going ahead and showing the knowledge of the statute, the knowledge that Ms. Gore had. Now, she knew enough to know that she shouldn't have her own people going ahead and doing that. But what does she do? She lets the arm of one party use a room in their office, and then comes the cover-up. What's the cover-up? She doesn't tell anybody publicly that it's done. She doesn't tell the Democratic Party. She doesn't tell the world that it's being done until a reporter, Mr. Altiero, breaks the story on radio on or about October 30th. What happens as a practical matter? Well, she says, first, the person was there 1 or 2 days. Then on deposition, I get her to say, could it have been as long as 9 or 10 days? She says, possibly. Then we depose Mr. Leach. Mr. Leach says, at least 15 days. And then we go ahead and we get deposed their employees, and one of their employees says, 3 weeks. Mr. Massiano says his estimate was that Mr. Leach was actually there for 3 weeks. Then Sandra Leach comes in, Ms. Gord comes in, and she says that with regard to the people that were there, first of all, I don't know who called me. Well, I would refer Your Honor to the excerpt of deposition that everyone agreed to be put in for Mr. Stelling. Now, Mr. Stelling is vice chair of the Republican Party of Florida. And
go on.
And the excerpt that I'm reading from is very short. At page 25, lines 11 through 24. Because what was bothering us is, who is this person? Mm-hmm. And did she have knowledge of who the person was? It didn't make sense when she said, I just don't know who the person is. I don't remember who this unidentified person is, but I go ahead and I do it. Mr. Stelling testifies. Question. When you say that Mrs. Gore told you that Mr. Schneck was the one who called her, is that... Did she mention his name, that he was the one who called her? Answer, actually, I know when that was now. Question, when was it? Answer, that was in here when Harry, that's referring to Harry Jacobs, plaintiff, was questioning her at the canvassing board meeting with Jacobs. Question, what happened at that time? Answer, she said that she did not call anybody. Question, did she say she got a call from Mr. Schneck? Answer, yes, she did. Because she wanted to know how she found out, and that's what she answered. Question, and she specifically identified Mr. Schneck. Answer, yes, she did. Now, do we have a sudden loss of memory when her deposition is taken just a couple of weeks later? Then, a couple of other excerpts relating directly to Ms. Gord. Gord, in volume 2 of her deposition, it lines... At page 19, line 8 through 17. Question, and you don't know how many days the other person came in, correct? Answer, correct. Question, and you told us earlier, you don't recall the name of the other person. And just have given us a very limited description, correct? Answer, yes. Question, do you know whether that other person worked for the Republican Party? Answer, no, I don't. But then you have the testimony, reading from the excerpt, of Mr. Leach. And what does Mr. Leach say on that exact same issue? At page 49, lines 17 through 23. Question, did you ever introduce to her or identify to her either of the two other people that you mentioned, the other regional directors who were here brief periods of time according to your testimony? Answer, she knows both Waldie and Carlos, from what I understand personally. Question, so she would know both of these people who came into the back to assist you? Answer, that's correct. Question, she would have been aware of the fact that they were here to assist you at the time they were here? Answer, that's correct. Question, did you observe her speaking with either of them when they came in? Answer, not when they walked in the door. Question, but at any time? Answer, if she would come into the back, she would initial pleasantry. Hello, how are you? Question, so she clearly knew who they were? Answer, clearly. And at page 49, and then I asked also a question, and did Sandra Gord, by the way, in regard to the two gentlemen you mentioned, I believe Carlos and what is it? Answer, Waldie. Question, Waldie, refer to them by name when they were here? Answer, from what I remember, yes. Now, following up on that, so you've got basically the cover-up. She doesn't want to tell us who the people are. She doesn't want to tell us who from the party called her. She's got to admit that somebody from the party did it because she's got to cover herself as to why she went ahead and did it at all. Now go to the next part. The party. Now we know that it's Mr. Schnick who called, and we know that Mr. Schnick sends in Mr. Leach. And what does Mr. Leach do for Mr. Leach's deposition? And this is so instructive in terms of what the party is doing in controlling this process and taking over, in effect, the public office that goes directly to the integrity of the process. At page 20, at line, beginning basically at about line, I don't have the actual numbers in here, but page 20, line 4 through page 21, line 1 is the excerpt. Question. And this is in the context of where he is talking to Mr. Schnick about coming down to do the work. Question, have you spoken to him before in terms of knowing how experienced he is, referring to Mr. Schnick, with regard to the law involving elections? Answer, I have full faith and confidence in Todd Schnick's abilities regarding the law and elections. He's been in politics for a long time. Question, so you just did whatever it is he told you to do in effect? Answer, I'm a military man. I follow orders. The orders in this case were to violate the law. The court asked, and I'm going to get to a few more excerpts shortly, but the court asked, of the two distinct issues the court stated it was going to be dealing with, the first is whether the addition, and I'll give you the language from the stipulation, is whether the addition or completion of voter registration ID numbers is sufficient to invalidate the absentee ballots. We'll address that in the remedy section, but the answer is an unequivocal yes. Because, as we pointed out to Your Honor, the legislature changed in 1998. The problem with absentee ballots, there's so many cases about fraud relating to absentee ballots, is it's a great vehicle to basically destroy the integrity of the process. So the legislature, responding in 1998 to what happened in 97, and by the way, in 97, Your Honor will recall, certainly there were innocent voters who voted in the absentee ballot pool. But because of the commingling, they were all thrown out because you couldn't trace them. So there were innocent voters, quote, disenfranchised because they voted by absentee ballot, which is a privilege. There was no other choice that the court had. And we suggest to Your Honor, other than the possibility of more limited equitable relief that I'll address at the end of my argument, there really is no other choice in this case because of what happened here with regard to the entire pool of absentee ballots being tainted. The second question that Your Honor asked, I believe we've already partially answered, is whether or not the Democratic Party and the Republican Party were treated differently by the supervisor of elections offices to the extent that the validity of the election process was compromised. And there I just have to put a little more meat on the bones. It isn't just a matter of changing the number on the card. It's a matter in this process of you have, and this is where the photographs I think come in handy. I know Your Honor said she saw the photograph, but I really believe a little short explanation of what they show, counsel has stipulated that I can do this, is helpful. This just shows the basic building. The second one, though, is important because it shows what happens when you come in. It shows that there's a counter here, and this is a non-public area. Mm-hmm. The public is out here. There's a restroom for the public here. And the public doesn't get back there without being supervised. Democrats, Republicans, or independents. The next picture shows the hallway, the gate, with regard to the public, if it's going to come in here. And these are all the people working around here. The next thing we see, this is from the back of the area looking at the front, the public area being here. Once the person comes in, there's a hallway over here to the left side of that picture, and that's Exhibit 4. Now, Exhibit 5 is important because it shows what happens when you come in. You go down here, and Your Honor will see this door down here. That's what leads to the back area and the rooms mm-hmm. that are there, where the absentee ballot request forms are kept and other things in what has been stipulated to unlock filing cabinets in an unlocked room. And here's the room. So the person, Mr. Leach, every day that he comes in, walks down this hallway. These are the restrooms here, the lady in the men's restroom right over here, mm-hmm. and there's the room. Wants to come out and use the restroom, go over here, he goes into that room, and nobody is posted in that room. There's not even testimony that the door is kept closed. The integrity of the election process, you've been an outsider from one party who could go into any place they wanted to within the election supervisor's office, and there's the room. This is the way it was at the time we took the picture, but you can see all of these things are flagged. These are the absentee ballot request forms that are in there, and these are the filing cabinets that are unlocked in that room. And nobody sits in there and works full time in that room, according to the testimony. Then, this is just another picture of the same room to show all of the data, all of the important things that are in there in this unlocked room, with an unsupervised Republican paid operative.
Let me ask you a question here.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is it your position that the integrity of the election was compromised because of access to the inner office or because of the addition of the voter registration ID numbers?
Both of them. All of them. The whole process of what was done here, we don't know what was done. We don't know what was thrown away. We will never know. Because of the lack of supervision and allowing the Republican
office in there. But if you don't know what was done,
right.
Are you asking the court to presume that something horrible was done?
No, what I'm asking the court to presume is that is within the basic concept of disparate treatment. We know, we don't have to presume what was done with regard to the absentee ballot request forms themselves, but we know in the entire framework of what happened here, that they had the opportunity, for example, the shoebox. We don't know what's in the shoebox. What was it in? There was nothing was logged in. That's one of the points I think I made in opening, and it's absolutely unrebutted, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. When the absentee ballot request forms came into this office, the testimony of Sandra Gordon and her employees is they were put aside. They were rejected, and she used the word rejected over and over again in her testimony. At that point, if you're going to follow what she said publicly on her internet website, they were void. Nobody's supposed to change them. They're public records. They're not supposed to be altered at that point. What happened? They're not logged in. Nobody knows where they are. But some of them, the Republican postcards, are the ones that get changed. Not one shred of testimony
that of any others than the Republican postcards were changed. Again, disparate treatment going right to the integrity of the process. And then, this is the hallway from that room. You follow down, you basically come from here, you make a left, and this is the room back there that was given to Mr. Leach and the two other Republican operatives. We stipulated for a brief time. We have no way of knowing how long. They were never logged in. Nobody supervised them. Nobody followed them. And that's the room. This is the room that Mr. Leach was in for anywhere from 15 to 21 days. There's a door in the back. You can walk in and out of the door, take things in and out. It's stipulated, nobody knows, no testimony as to what he had in his briefcase, what he brought in, what he took out, other than he had a laptop.
But again, are you asking me to presume that things happen that are not in evidence here?
No, I'm not asking.
Because they have that apparently unfettered access?
No, I'm not asking Your Honor to presume anything. I'm asking Your Honor to presume one thing, and that is that this goes to the integrity of the process to allow a person from one party unsupervised to be in there. That's part of the overall picture of what happened here. You can't just go ahead and look at the voter ID numbers.
Had she allowed people from various parties to go into that inner office?
Absolutely no testimony to that.
Let me ask the question.
Yes.
Had she allowed various people from various parties to go into that inner office, unfettered and unsupervised? Would that access alone be enough to compromise the entire election?
I think that alone may not be, but it could be. I mean, I think you need to put a little more meat in the bones. That's
well,
one
my
thing.
Question.
Your question is, did she let people from all other parties come in?
And the question boils down to, is it the unfettered access? Whether it's by the Republicans, the Democrats, whoever else, is it the unfettered access?
Unfettered access.
That renders the process so compromised that I can't give it effect.
Unfettered access to one party, yes.
Okay. But you still
if everybody had access, I think what you'd probably have to say is you've got a really sloppy, negligent supervisor, and you'd probably have to know more. But she says here that anybody who comes
in
is supposed to be escorted.
Just being sloppy and negligent, and that's not really the issue before
that. That's exactly the point. That's why I said this is intentional wrongdoing.
Okay.
She intentionally did this. She even testified, as I recall, that normally anybody coming in would be supervised. But these people weren't. And they're only representatives of one party.
And let me ask you another question. If this is a violation, if the unfettered access is a violation of her policy, does that also render it a violation of the law?
I can't cite a specific statute, Your Honor. I haven't looked into that, but I would say this. I would say yes, with regard to the law involving disparate treatment.
That's not quite my question, though. And I understand where you're going, but you're taking my question a little bit too far. I guess I'm trying to break it down a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And trying to find out from you your position on the very narrow issue.
And could you reframe the issue again?
Yes. Is even assuming for a moment that she violated a long-standing, perhaps even written policy to allow unfettered access into the inner office, does the violation of her policy constitute a violation of the law?
In and of itself, I'd say no. I don't think we can go that far. The only other thing that the pictures show, Your Honor, very briefly, is the room. Aside from the door, you can see the area where they were, and this is combined with the exhibit, the handwritten exhibit of Sandra Gord, and it basically shows with this little
X. You might
want
to put that a little bit closer to me.
Sure. The little X that's there, in relation to the room, is where she says that this police was safe.
Okay.
In relation to this room. And what you can see very clearly, her computer
and terminal. And where would this X be on that photograph that you've got?
As near as I can tell from here, the tables might be, would be somewhere right in this area. In other words, on that left side.
Mm-hmm.
The door being there, he would have been sitting right in this area. And Mr. Massiano, I believe, he said, was sitting somewhere at the desk right in here that you can't see it as you come in on the side. But as testified to by Mr. Massiano, he was not there all the time. The person was not supervised. And this is important because it shows you the computer terminals, the next exhibit, which is number 11. The testimony is that you had to get a password to get in there, but there's also testimony from one of the employees.
A password to get into that section or onto the computer?
To get onto the computer. To log onto the computer, you needed a password. Nobody knows whether or not he had the password, but what we do know is he was there in the room while a training session took place, and the computers were on and were left on. Again.
But if nobody knows, and there's been no testimony to that fact, again, I can't presume that he had access to the password. Is that correct?
I'm not suggesting that's correct. But what I am saying is unrefuted in this record is that the computers were left on.
Okay.
They were on in the room.
Okay.
And nobody knows what happened from that point. And the Democrats weren't there when that was on. No one was. And lastly, this just basically shows the room, but the last photograph shows the open door in the back to the back of the room, which is photograph number 14.
One case citation we rely on, Bolden versus Potter, for this language. The burden of establishing with certainty that a specific number of ballots were tainted so as to affect the outcome of the election would be too great. This is the Florida Supreme Court, 1984. Such a restrictive holding would encourage fraud and corruption in the election process. And we've heard much about the will of the electorate. And what the Supreme Court in this case says is, although the will of the electorate must be protected, so must the sanctity of the ballot and the integrity of the election. Very briefly, on the disparate treatment issue, Your Honor heard the testimony of Steve Hall, which is unrebutted, just on two issues. A Democrat comes in and he is told that the information must be there. It must be correct, or it's not going to be accepted or processed. He's not told you can have somebody from your party come in or someone come in and alter it and we'll do it, and this is on August 18th. He's also told he wanted to get some additional information, and the Republican elected supervisor was, in his words, less than helpful. But then we get to Mr. Ray. Mr. Ray was called really for one purpose, disparate treatment. Mr. Ray has a bunch of, I think he had about 900 signatures or whatever that he tried to get on the petition to save the $3,700 filing fee. He needed to get 2,000. He never gets that far. He comes in, he brings them to Sandra Gord, and she explains to him that there are problems, there are things that are wrong. He testified that some of them didn't have the voter identification number. He wants to take it back out to get them corrected. And what does Sandra Gore do to this person who she knows is running as a Democrat? She says, you can't take them out. They're public property, public records. Absolutely.
This isn't that witness to prove that there was disparate treatment between how Republicans are being treated and how Democrats are being treated.
Absolutely.
Well, let me ask you a question. In considering whether or not there was disparate treatment between people, don't I really have to consider the almost identical activity rather than different kinds of activity? I have to look at the exact same activity or as close to it as possible before I can determine whether or not there's disparate treatment because it's totally different activity.
Your Honor, it shows, I understand what Your Honor is saying, but it shows what the office was doing, how they're treating Democrats. Admittedly, it's not voter ID number, but it is because he said, in fact, I've got to rethink what I just said. He does say that some of those petitions had voter ID identification numbers missing.
Mm-hmm.
And he tries to take it out so he can go back and correct it. And she says no. So that clearly is disparate treatment, and that part of it's right on point. There were other reasons.
Those were on his petitions to be qualified without having to pay a filing fee.
That's correct.
Okay.
And certainly since voter ID number is an issue, that is about as close as we're going to get. I mean, as opposed to the Democratic Party coming in, but it doesn't have to be the party. Mm-hmm. Just like Mr. Jacobs, the plaintiff in this case, is not the party. He's a voter. Yes, he's a Democrat, but that's not the issue in this case. The issue is disparate treatment, and that brings us to our next witness, which is Mr. Livingston. Why did we call Mr. Livingston? Because Mr. Livingston is a lifelong Republican, former, and by the way, we didn't call him. They subpoenaed him. Because he filed the protest. They asked him the question. And what he basically said is, I was appalled I was the clerk of the courts in a place, I don't think he said Richmond, Virginia, but in Virginia, mm-hmm. an elected Republican official, and he goes ahead and he requests the absentee ballot, and absentee ballot through a request form, but then he comes in here and sees what's happening. He said, this is appalling. You can't do this in a public place. That goes, again, and Your Honor very correctly pointed out that this is a court of law, not a court of public opinion, but the perception of respect for the legal system and for the elective process is what is at stake here. That is extremely important in terms of the precedent that this case is going to set and the cases that have come before in terms of corrupting the process and maintaining the integrity of the process. And that's what Mr. Livingston, in effect, was called for as a witness in this case. Then we get to, and this I'm going to hit very quickly, mm-hmm. Sandra Gord, knowledge of the law, knows that it would be void and had to be rejected. The cover-up I've mentioned, the lack of a login, the unlocked and non-public area. Now, let me buttress that. I think I've got it right here. To save time in this case, everybody worked together and we limited what we were going to read in, but I just want to read in a couple of very, very brief excerpts from the deposition of Eleanor Bailey, one of the employees at the Supervisor of Elections office. Just this, because what she confirms, and we didn't know about this until we took her deposition, is that when the Republican operative came in, Sandra Gord held a meeting to tell her people what he was going to be doing. So here she's using her paid public employees to go ahead and assist the Republican Party in what it's doing, the Republican operatives. And she's asked at page 6, line 8, question, and do you know if they were pre-printed by the Republican Party and sent to voters? Is that your understanding? Yes, that's what I was told. Question, who told you that? Answer, we were told in a meeting at the office. Question, when was the meeting, before or after election? Answer, before. Question, okay, who was at the meeting that you recall? Answer, the whole office was. Question, who chaired, who was in charge of the meeting? Answer, Mrs. Gord. Question, in knowing you can't remember exactly what people said, what was the gist of it? What did you hear at that meeting? Answer, I do not remember the whole meeting. I just remember that we were going to start receiving these in and that it was something that was done through the Republican Party. We never would have known about that meeting if not for that testimony. Then we have the testimony of Bonnie Eaton, page 17, line 9. Question, as part of your responsibilities as a clerk in this Office of Elections, were you instructed that the voter registration number was a very important piece of information? Answer, yes. Question, and you were told that if that number was incorrect, you could not process the application form. Answer, correct. Question, and did you always follow that instruction? Answer, yes. And then we have the testimony of Mr. Joyner. Again, a couple of very short excerpts. Page 13, line 20. I don't have the exact line number, but it's in the excerpt that we have that starts with page 13, line 23. Okay. Question, and this shows the use of the staff. Who is it that physically did the separation? Answer, at that point in time, I was doing most of the separation of all the mail to help out the rest of the staff. Question, okay, and what is it that you separated out? Answer, I separated all the mail, including, you know, these requests, the request forms. Question, and when you say request forms, which request forms are you referring to? Answer, the Republican request forms, or you know, that were submitted, you know, by individuals requesting an absentee ballot. Question, did you segregate the Republican request forms, the ones that were identified as part of the mass mailing by the Republican Party, separate from other absentee ballot request forms? Answer, yes.
We're going to leave this program now to fulfill our commitment to live coverage of the U.S. House of Representatives.